Brothers and sisters, I can't believe it. Praise God. This is very difficult for me, but bear with me. At the age of 16 years old, my cousin was studying with a man who was teaching him the guitar, and this man was a Jehovah's Witness. We're a year apart. He at that time was about 17. And my aunt had called me and said that my cousin was acting strange, that he was studying with these Jehovah's Witnesses. And I didn't know what that was. I thought that it was some kind of insanity, because I had never heard of a Jehovah's Witness. So I went over to talk to him. He was a musician, and still is. And I said, "Boy, you're crazy. You know that?" I said, "I'm going to hit you right across the mouth." Now, I was born and raised in South Philadelphia. That's the way we talked then, and I think they still talk the same way now. But anyway, he approached me. I approached him with anger. And he approached me with the Bible. And I, being a church-going person, being born and raised in a religious family, going to church, going to religious grammar in high school, the church I went to wasn't a really strong church that taught grace and salvation through Jesus Christ. And, of course, they taught us not to read the Bible, that they would interpret it for us. So I had never had the opportunity to read God's Word. But I loved God. I didn't know Jesus. And when I prayed as a young boy, I just prayed to God. So anyway, my cousin came at me with the Bible and started to show me scripturally that everything that I believed in was wrong. Of course, nothing was in context. He just turned and turned to different scriptures. And I said to him, "Wow, this ain't so bad after all. It's really not too bad. I don't know why your family are all upset." So anyway, he said that he would discuss it with me further, and I was all game. So I said to my aunt, "Well, he's not doing anything too wrong, you know. What could be wrong about the Bible?" Little did I know. We had, I didn't give it a second thought after. You know, I went home and forgot about it. And occasionally when I would run into him, he would give me more new light. And he showed me that everything that I had learned was unreasonable. So I began to become interested in this different kind of religion. I was totally unaware that I wasn't able to celebrate any holidays. I was unaware that I could never send my parents a Mother's Day card or a Father's Day card. I was totally unaware that I'd never be able to vote, that I'd never be able to salute the flag, that the doctrines that almost drove me insane were there, and I never knew it. So I was married very young at 18 years old. And we were married no more than a month. Knock, knock, knock. My cousin and the elder, whom this was the man who was his guitar teacher. And my wife and I were all excited. "Yeah, come on in. This is fantastic. You know, we'll study." So anyway, slowly but surely, we began studying. And before I knew it, I became a Jehovah's Witness, my wife and I. It was all a lot of fun. I was so zealous that I'll never forget, it snowed and there were nothing. I mean, there was absolutely no transportation. And I walked to the Kingdom Hall, which was, I would say, a couple of miles from my house. But I was just so zealous, you know. I thought, wow, these are my people. Because I was getting this attention, going to the Kingdom Hall. I had never experienced anyone coming up to me and calling me brother and shaking my hand and taking an interest in me. So it's such a slow brainwashing process, because you don't realize that, and when you're uninformed, as I was, you don't realize that there are things taking place in your subconscious mind. Slowly but surely, you begin to look down on the people in your church. You begin to become arrogant, self-righteous. But I didn't know what these things meant. I thought, being so young, 18, I thought that self-righteousness was being holy. These were good people. They don't dare go to a birthday party. As this was one of the first things they had told me, that birthday parties were no-no. And because it was, I think, my wife's birthday, and I had said, hey, we're going to have a big birthday party. Would you like to come over? Don't you know that's pagan? I said, what? I've been doing this all my life. So they had a lot of different clippings and so many different articles proving that birthdays were pagan. I said, can you show me in the Bible? They said, well, yes, in a sense. I said, what do you mean, in a sense? And they said, well, because John the Baptist lost his head on the king's daughter's birthday, so therefore all birthdays are pagan. Well, my wife almost went through the ceiling. And she said, they're crazy. They're absolutely crazy. And I was the one that started arguing with her about it. I said, yeah, well, look, it's pagan. And I could see that, you know. So anyway, uninformed and naive. So anyway, as before I knew it, they asked us to be baptized, Jehovah's Witnesses, because if we weren't and the end came, we would not be saved. I became very confused at that, because I thought, well, suppose right now there are thousands of people studying and the end comes. You mean to tell me they're not going to be saved? But anyway, we're talked into it, became baptized. My wife was totally against it, but she came along and became baptized. And at the time, we were having our first child. So it was no problem not celebrating Christmas and all of these things that they were laying on us, slowly but surely. I wasn't old enough to vote at the time, so that had no effect on me. My family were pretty reasonable as far as my stand toward the holidays. My wife's mother wasn't. She became very, very upset. She couldn't understand. She felt we didn't love her. And there was no way we could make her understand that we love you. She's the kind of woman that loves to get cards. And if she doesn't get a card, now this is how this woman, how she felt. She just enjoyed the thoughtfulness of a card. If she didn't get a card, she'd write one and mail it to herself. This is the kind of woman she was. And, you know, as Christians, we have to learn to understand everyone and their personalities. We have to love them. But we didn't know that she would be so hurt. And she disowned us because we didn't send her a card or a present. And she cried. And we discussed this with the elders, and they said that she was probably demonic. So, my wife became hysterical. She said, I can't handle this. She said, I don't want to go out in this service anymore. She said, I don't feel good. She was, I would say, about 8 months pregnant at this time. She said, I'm too tired to go out in service. And I said, well, you know, if you love Jehovah, you'll go. And I spoke to the elders about it, and they said she should go. So there was fighting in our marriage. The more we fought about it, the more upset she got. And she began to feel that she wasn't worthy because she couldn't do the things that Jehovah's Witnesses could do. So she rebelled and just never went to meetings within the first year or two of my becoming a Jehovah's Witness. And I was a witness for 18 years. So it was a nightmare because it was constant pressure. The baby was born, and the witnesses would say to me, isn't it wonderful that she's born in the truth and she will live? And I was very happy about that. I was really patting myself on the back, being very self-righteous. So as time went on, we moved. We were living in Philadelphia. I was doing pretty good at my job, making a good living. We moved to New Jersey, and we stayed away from the witnesses for a while. Because I was just, I was about 20, starting to think a little more than I was as a teenager. So anyway, I stayed away from them, and we were really happy. Until one day a knock on the door came. At 6 months, we were living in this new area, and we were fine. We were celebrating birthdays, doing everything. Because reasonably, I reasoned myself that I wasn't indoctrinated that much at the time. Anyway, I didn't realize that how much indoctrination I had, but at that point, it was just a slight indoctrination. Just enough to keep me thinking that that was the truth. But my personality to love people, I really enjoy people. I enjoy playing the guitar and singing. This is how I grew up. This continued, and we would have little friends over and have little parties and things. And before I knew it, my wife was bringing a cake for the kids, baking cakes for the one child's birthday. And at that time, we had had another one. So anyway, we were having a grand old time until we got the knock on the door 6 months after we had moved to New Jersey. And a young boy was there with a watchtower, and I said, hey, I'm a Jehovah's Witness too. So he said, wow, no kidding, I found one. That's terrific. So he sent his parents to my door, and I began studying with them, really into it. I decided that I wanted to serve God, and I was not going to play around anymore. So as time went on, we had our third child. We had a small ranch home at the time, and we outgrew it. And I bought a big, beautiful home in Cherry Hill, New Jersey. Very palatial-looking house. We were waiting for that house to be built, and we were living with my mother. And I began getting second thoughts about what I was doing. I was married young. I had three children. I began to feel that I was pressured. I started feeling the pressure. And I got scared. And I said, wow, what am I doing, you know, taking on all of this responsibility? So anyway, I was feeling guilty. I felt guilt. I was starting to feel guilty. The more guilt I felt, the more I tried to study, go out in the service. I realized that I wanted to be like the other Jehovah's Witnesses. They were so perfect. They never did all of these things. They never celebrated a holiday. They never sinned. Our friends, yeah, our friends at the time, I went out on a Bible study with this, my friend's wife, and she told the people she was studying with, it was her study, that she doesn't sin. She said, I don't sin. She said, I don't do anything wrong. I'm a good wife. I don't cheat. I don't curse. I don't do anything. And that kind of hit me. I said, that doesn't make any sense. But as naive as I was, I just absorbed it all. And they were very nice people. But as time was proceeding, the guilt entered, and I knew that I was a sinner. I knew that I couldn't stop sinning. I would make deals with Jehovah. I would say, Jehovah, I'm not going to have a bad thought today. I am not going to lie. I'm not going to think about this and that. Because I wasn't feeling good. And I thought, if it's because I wasn't being blessed, because I was a sinner. I didn't know grace. I didn't know that Jesus shed his blood for me and died for me, that he washed me with his blood. I didn't know this. So I was trying to work my way to salvation. And I was going out into the service more and more and more. I got to a point where I didn't want to get up in the morning. I would knock on the doors in the service, and the person would come to the door, and I'd just get sick. I couldn't read a watchtower anymore. Couldn't pick it up. Couldn't pick on a wake up. Every time I read it, I just felt as though I was going to explode, because I realize at this point that the responsibility was not the house, not the children, but the fact that I had to go to the teacher now that my child was old enough to attend school and tell the teacher that this little girl cannot salute the flag, cannot celebrate any holidays, cannot participate in anything, because the Kingdom Hall that I went to, they even put down sports of any kind. I realized that I could never send them to dancing school, and I was, when I would think of this, my stomach started killing me. We had, all of this is going on at one time. We finally got into the house. It was finished, and there was no joy. I couldn't stay in the house. I just didn't want to get out of bed. I dreaded to tell my child that this is your first day of kindergarten. You cannot do these things. Because I knew that emotionally, it's wrong for a child. I had some psychology, and I understood that if you take a child and you love her, and you want to give her everything in life, you want a good home, you want to be a good father, and then she's so secure in this little beehive, real secure. The first day, you know what kids are like. They're usually afraid the first day of school. So I visualized her going in, being shy and timid, but with all these other things. I thought it was going to frighten this kid to death. So took her to school, never said a word. Postponed it. Jehovah, I'll do it later. Later never came. Guilt. Guilt. More guilt. I went to the Kingdom Hall, and they gave a talk on materialism and how we should not be materialistic and how this will pull us away from the truth. And here I was in this palatial house with a spiral staircase going up 15-foot high ceilings. And I looked at that house and I felt so guilty that I wanted to die. And I thought, if as long as I stay in this house, I'll never be happy. And I'll never be able to serve Jehovah. I wanted to quit my job because I was making too much money. The other brothers and sisters weren't making any. This is what can happen when you are indoctrinated with doctrines of demons. Yes. So, I said to my wife, we got to sell the house. She said, oh, you're not going to take me out of this house. She said, I was happy in the other one. She said, I would have stayed there. You got me here, now you're going to sell it. I said, look, I got to serve Jehovah. And I want to cut down on my work. And we'll move into something smaller. She said, where do you want to move? I said, well, maybe we can get a little row house in South Philadelphia. Well, my wife began to get sick emotionally. And I was totally confused. It was showing at the office that I worked in. I worked with children, and the kids would say to me, what's the matter? Don't you like your job? Why do you look so unhappy? So there was no peace. I had no peace of mind. I couldn't sleep. I began taking tranquilizers, began drinking to get to sleep. Saw a psychiatrist, and I felt guilty because I saw the psychiatrist, because I'm not supposed to see a psychiatrist. It's their world. And it's like a chain. It's like a circle. You can't escape. I went to the psychiatrist, told him I was Jehovah's Witness. He said to me, no wonder why. He said, anybody in that organization has got to be crazy. I said, thanks a lot. Got up and left. Saw another one. I saw three. Finally, the third psychiatrist I saw was a very warm person and very understanding. And I started telling him my story, but not about being a Jehovah's Witness, because that was the truth. I have to say, this is important. The second psychiatrist that I saw, I left him after about a year and a half, because he felt that I needed amibarbital, which was a truth serum. So three times a week, I would go, and they'd stick a needle in my arm. I have no veins in this arm. And pump this stuff into me.
You're in the truth.
And I remember screaming. He asked me now to talk, and I was like, phew, out of it, you know. I couldn't feel anything, but it felt good. It was the first relaxation I ever got. So he asked me a few questions, and I screamed, I hate the organization. I hate it. I hate it. I hate it. I hate it. It's driving me crazy. I hate it. And I remember that as clear as could be. After the session was over, I felt guilty because I said that. So it was a total and complete guilt trip. The brothers were furious with me in the congregation because I was seeing a psychiatrist. They kept visiting the house saying that I was becoming weak because I was so sick I couldn't go out from door to door. I became so confused that the doctrines they were teaching me that I told them, I said, every time I open the watchtower, it's telling me something else that I can't do. They were constantly lecture about the peripheral things. Your income tax, your driving over the speed limit, even playing chess was frowned upon because it was a game of war. Every aspect of everything that I did was affected. Everything. My boy wanted to get into Boy Scouts. He wasn't allowed to. He wasn't allowed to play baseball. He wanted to get on the school baseball team. No, that'll interfere with meetings. So anyway, in the meantime, I was depending on this amibarbital three times a week. And I got in a car accident because I couldn't see what I was doing or where I was going. And decided that I would leave this doctor, that what he was doing wasn't helping me at all. I found another guy, and I proceeded to see him for 10 years. Count that money. I sold my house. I was ready to leave my job. But the good Lord held me on to that job. Because if I would have left that job, I don't know what would have happened. We moved into a smaller home. My wife at this point was ill. She was a lot worse than I was. She told me that she detested God, that all God ever does is make her feel guilty. The only escape she could get was out of the bottle. So she was now seeing a psychiatrist. Years are going by, and I was so dependent upon the elders, because they take your mind and they make you feel so insecure that you can't do anything without them. I mean, I got to a point where I couldn't do a thing without asking the elders. Consistent with my job, if I had to, with some of the children, there was, I'm an orthodontic technologist, I work with doctors, and the doctor that I work with doesn't know, he doesn't know a lot of procedures concerning the work that I do, but we work together with braces. And I would do some jobs that he should have been doing in the mouth. And I said, oh, this is a sin. I'm not supposed to be doing this, you know. And really, I was helping him out. I was really helping him out because I did a lot better job than he did, just putting in the braces and tying them up. But again, I felt, I can't do this. You know, I can't do it. It's a sin. And I would go to the elders, and they gave me permission. Yes, we think that's okay. So, and this is what I did with everything. With everything. I don't know why, but that's the effect it had on me. Because I believed that they had the truth. I believed that these people were of God. And I thought that I couldn't conform to them. And I knew I was a sinner. And I knew that I couldn't stop sinning. It was impossible. And I couldn't keep the deals that I made with God. So I began praying for the truth. I would get up every day and ask Jehovah, if this were not the truth, would you show me? And if it is, help me to conform to it. Bless me. I want to serve you. But for some reason, I could not get any joy in that organization. I could not get a thing from the meetings. I'd sit there for 2 hours, and I couldn't absorb anything. I'd study for the book studies. Couldn't absorb it. I would read the same paragraph over and over and over. I couldn't understand why. As I prayed about 2.5 to 3 years that the Lord would conform me to his organization, that Jehovah would, they do not say Lord. Never use that word. I began seeing that there were some people in the organization that were not so perfect. As I was praying, I was getting stronger. As the stronger I was getting, the more annoyed the elders in the congregation were getting. They liked me the way I was. So I began enlarging my house and working out in the yard and really fixing up the place. And the psychiatrist I was seeing was really dynamic. He was a great help. I went into the organization with him. He understood everything I said. He never tried to talk me out of it because he knew that if he did, I'd leave. I placed watchtowers and awakes with him. I witnessed JW propaganda to him. And he said to me, "You know, I'm a Jewish man." He said, "But my religion is supposed to make me happy." He said, "I'm not a religious man, but," he said, "I know religion is supposed to give you peace of mind." He said, "This that you're in is unbelievable, diabolical." And I agreed. As I was praying for truth, I was finding that the elders in the congregation and the publishers, brothers and sisters in the congregation, began disliking the way my hair was combed. I was told that we don't wear the hair below the top of the ear. They wanted me to dress less conspicuous, more conservative. They told me my daughter's skirts were too short. Continual picking, every little thing. At that time, I was studying with a guy who was emotionally disturbed, and I thought that I was going to help him to bring him into the truth. I studied with him for about a year or two. Finally, he was coming to the Kingdom Hall. I told the brothers and sisters, I said, "Look, this kid's been very sick. He's been in mental institutions. Go easy with him." Before I knew it, this guy was going to meetings, and I thought, wow, my first fruit. It took all these years. Couldn't bear any fruit. Within 8 months, I got a letter in the mail. "I am going to kill you. I'm going to get you when you least expect it." And he cursed me and blasphemed Jehovah's name. I was shocked. I was absolutely shocked. I had never had my life threatened before. My first concern was for my family. I just worried about the kids. And it's a really strange feeling to walk out of your house and have to look both ways. It's really weird. But anyway, he sent me several letters daily. And I took the letters. I went to the Kingdom Hall to show the elders. I was really upset. The meeting was just beginning. And he had implicated this other guy that he was going to get him too. So I went up to this other brother. And I showed him. He was standing by the sound system. And I showed him this letter. And another brother said to me, "Would you please wait till the song is over before you discuss any of this stuff?" I turned around and looked at him. I said, "Who do you think you're talking to? How dare you talk to me that way?" I said, "Do you know what this letter contains?" He said, "I'm sorry, I had no idea this guy was working the sound system." What was happening was the Lord knew that I would not leave that organization because I wasn't reading my Bible. I was involved totally into their literature. I believed every doctrine. Even though it was driving me crazy, I thought it was my background. Oh, my father did something, my mother did something when I was a kid, you know. But the thing is, I grew up fine. I mean, I was fine. What was happening to me? What was making me sick? Why didn't I want to get up in the morning? Why did I want to die? I toyed with suicide consistently. I toyed with it. There was no peace, no peace, total torment. I thought the demons were getting me, and that the witnesses, by going to the kingdom hall, this would chase them away. And they told so many stories. Jehovah's Witnesses are so preoccupied with thoughts concerning demons. I had heard so many demon stories that I didn't want to hear another one. My kids were scared to death because we got a babysitter at one time. The girl that was babysitting told them about the demon in her house and how he would pull the cover down from her brother's bed. I'd get home, my kids were hysterical. My wife said, "They're crazy, hon. They're crazy, I'm telling you." I said, "Well, you can't judge everybody by that, but that is a little crazy." I heard stories about demons being in cars, their cars. One after another, I would hear stories about demons in their homes, that they had to buy another home. And I would think, I'd rationalize, "Well, what's to stop a demon from coming into my house? How do I stop it?" Not knowing the scriptures, where it says, "Greater is he that is in you than he that is in the world." The pain was absolutely indescribable. I thought that I would never see the day that I could be a happy, normal person. And I thought everything else, I had toyed with leaving my wife and family. Maybe I'll feel better. But I loved them too much to do that. So I thought, well, what I'll do is I'll just get up every day, go to work, and come home to bed. And that's what I'll do till the kids get big. Then who knows? So, but the Lord was showing me something, because my kids at this, we've gone many years now, but my kids at this point are teenagers. They're each a year and a half apart. The oldest was about 13, the next youngest, 12, and 10. I sent my wife flowers, and it was around Mother's Day. Some of the sisters came to visit her, saw the flowers, and my wife said, "Oh, yes, my husband sent them to me." Well, they started gossiping that we were worldly. So one of the teenagers called my daughter and said, "We heard what goes on in your house. We thought your father was a Jehovah's Witness, but we know that you're worldly." We could laugh about this, but imagine what was going on in my daughter's mind. Totally confused, because her father did a loving act, but yet this loving act was wrong. So she was hysterical, crying. And I could see her shaking. So I explained to them that some Jehovah's Witnesses are just strange. So I said, "Don't let that bother you." I said, "Listen to your dad. Don't let anybody bother you or make you that upset." So anyway, I'm still praying for truth. And I'm saying, "Jehovah, you never answer me. I'm praying and I'm praying every day. I'm still not conformed to this organization. I still cannot agree with everything that they do. My wife is hysterical and sick. We're both seeing a psychiatrist." And I didn't realize that God was answering that prayer. Because every time we went to the Kingdom Hall, my kids came out of there upset. Every time I discussed something with one of the brothers or sisters in the congregation, they were putting us down. We were tagged as worldly. They wouldn't allow my daughter into their home because they didn't like the eye makeup. She was beginning, you know, at that age, the eyes. They didn't like the fact that she was putting makeup on. The elder called me and said that I should lengthen her skirt. I said, well, I'll tell you the truth. I get home from work at 7. I'm trying to gulp my food down to get to this 7:30 meeting. I don't even know what they have on. I don't look at the length of their skirts. I said, but I'll tell you, they are growing like weeds, and I will have to get them closed. I was very nice about it. This elder said to me, it just takes one, Alex. So I just looked at him. And I was starting to see something. And I said, my God, they're like the scribes and the Pharisees. I was seeing self-righteousness that was unexplainable and intolerable. I would see how they would make fun of the people that wouldn't accept the literature and just look down like, huh, the world. That attitude was disgusting. I just couldn't stand it. And I began speaking up and saying, you know, I there's something I don't understand. You people are doing things that, to me, is not appealing to the way Jesus would do things. So they were beginning to feel that I was rebelling. I said to the brother, I called him and I said, you know, why did you answer me in such a manner when I told you that I was going to get new clothes for the kids? He said, well, I was just telling you what the society told me to say. I said, it's not what you said, it's the way you said it. I said, you talked down to me. Why? Why do you have to usurp such a position over me? You're an elder. You're supposed to build the congregation up. I said, but it seems that this congregation puts people down. The Lord was building strength inside of me. And I was beginning to think, finally, on my own. I was clearly seeing that something was drastically wrong with the organization, and I was expressing it to everybody in the congregation. I thought that I could change things. I said, look, why don't we get together a group or a home every Saturday night so the teenagers have a place to go? Because I have 3 kids, and they're not allowed to play with the kids in the world. They are not allowed to socialize with them. They are not allowed to go to dances or games or anything else. And it's too frustrating for them. And I'm sure the other kids feel the same way. So let's get together and have a youth program for them. Are you trying to change our system? I said, no. But these kids. I said, why don't we have schools for them? This way we don't have to put them under that pressure of being the only one in school not saluting the flag. Well, they were beginning to tell me stories. Oh, yeah, we know a youth pastor in this Methodist church, and he was seeing women on the side. We're not having any of that. I said, you mean to tell me if there's a man who wants to lead the youth that he's going to run around with women because he's leading the youth? I said, that was one instance. It has nothing to do with every person. People are individuals. They just don't see this. You cannot make a suggestion. They look at you like you're crazy. So I'm just beside myself. And I'm thinking, well, I'm the guy seeing the psychiatrist. I must be crazy. I gotta be crazy. So anyway, What proceeded to happen, I had a court case because I had this guy arrested that was threatening me. I was getting more involved with the people in the organization. And I was really beginning to see something, that these people had more hang-ups than I had. But they didn't know about it. So, in the meantime, my wife was very ill, and I thought, somebody's got to be strong. So, I thought that our marriage would never last because she would beg me not to go to the meetings. She begged me, she said, please stay with me tonight. Please don't go. And I said, don't give me the choice between you and Jehovah. Please. I was going through so much because this is such a tearing inside of you. There's always this pressure. And they knew it. But they didn't have the decency to help me. They just kept putting us down, calling us worldly. They finally disfellowshipped my wife for smoking. When they did that to her, I was beginning to see what the organization really was. She said, please don't let the kids hear this announcement. I said, I won't. I was so humiliated because I wanted to serve God. And I thought this was the truth. And now I'm involved in such a scandalous thing like a disfellowshipment. And I knew it would happen. No one would talk to her. They disfellowshipped her. And she remained like a zombie. She sat down in front of the TV and just drank. She said, I can't serve God. I don't even love God. I can't go to this meeting, this organization. Everything they do is driving me crazy, driving you crazy. It hasn't brought us together, so leave me alone. The pressure was indescribable, but the Lord was giving me strength and working. And he was showing me what the people were. That's the only way, because I wasn't reading the Bible. I was reading everything else but God's Word. So the Lord is so gracious and so loving that he had to bring my wife and I to rock bottom. To the very rock bottom that he turned those people against us. Now I know this may sound paranoid to you, but it's not. Because they did not like my children. They now were convinced that we were a worldly family. And that they would have nothing to do with us. Now this is what I'm faced with as the head of the house. I'm not allowed to socialize with anyone other than Jehovah's Witnesses. My kids aren't allowed. My wife is this fellowship. They won't speak to me. I have family that are Jehovah's Witnesses. They would not be coming to the house anymore. So here we were with no fellowship. I thought I was going to lose my mind again. Again it was starting. And I said, what a predicament. I mean, this is unbelievable. I'm in a little world all by myself. The witnesses don't want us and the world don't want us. We're doomed if we do and we're doomed if we don't. What do I do? So I said to my wife, hon, we're going to have a party. And I am going to invite all of your family and all of my family that are not Jehovah's Witnesses. She said, are you really? I said, yeah. I said, and guess when? New Year's Eve. I had some very, very deep feelings about it, but I was absolutely beside myself. I had to do something. I had to have some friends. I had to be singing. I had to be playing that guitar and having a good time. And we had the party, went to the Kingdom Hall 2 weeks later, called by an elder, and he said, "We heard that you had something going on at your house New Year's Eve." I said, "Oh, they're going to disfellowship me now." I said, "Yeah." He said, "I want you to tell me about it." I said, "Wait a minute." I said, "This is in my house." I said, "This was behind my doors." I said, "I didn't do anything immoral. I didn't steal. I didn't cheat. I didn't do anything. I had a party." I said, "Didn't you have friends over your house on New Year's Eve for dinner?" He said, "Yes." I said, "Well, you had a party." He said, "Well, that was different. Did you blow up any firecrackers?" We did. I said, "No, I lied." He said, "Okay, then." He said, "Then it was just a gathering." I said, "Yes." I left there, got into my car, and cried like a baby. Because I said, "Jehovah, what am I into? I feel like I am in prison. But this is a worse prison than any prison in the world, because there's bars around my mind." So I began, for the first time in my life, crying. Crying like a baby. I said, how bad is this that I've got to lie? Because I had a party. Now I am a liar. Just because I had a party. So as I thought about it, I questioned them as to how they found out. Because everybody at my house was from Philadelphia. And I live in New Jersey. I made sure I didn't have anybody from New Jersey so that they wouldn't get word of it. So here, my brother is an elder. He's 10 years younger than I am. He is a half-brother. And his uncle, my father had brought his uncle, who was not a Jehovah's Witness. But his uncle proceeded to tell other people and the family that he had a nice time at my house at my New Year's Eve party. But it was very boring. Because we didn't have any wild drinking and all. He wasn't a witness, and he's an unsaved man. So he thought it was kind of boring. So this is how my brother found out in New Jersey. My brother would not attempt to face me with it, and he went to the elders. So I was really praying to the Lord. And in the meantime, my daughter is going with a boy. Now she's 16. She met this boy at the Jehovah's Witness skating parties. And she wanted to marry him at 15. I said, "No, what are you doing? Are you crazy?" I said, 15 years old. And, of course, this was a big crush. He loved her at 15 also. And he was not a witness. Okay, I could not stop this attraction that she had for him and he for her. Now, I must say that my oldest daughter never has given me a hair of a problem. Beautiful, sweet, timid, shy girl. Never did she disobey me willfully. So here, she was telling me that she will not break off with him. I said, But you know you cannot date someone who is not a Jehovah's Witness. She said, "But he's really nice. He's nicer than they are." I said, "It can't be." So I said, you are not to see him. He called me up a week later crying, and he said, please, I'll do anything. I'll join your religion. So I talked to him about Jehovah and the organization and the Watchtower, and he agreed to study. So we studied for 1 year. And he thought Jehovah's Witnesses were the greatest. And he said he never met a family like ours. He said, I never knew a family so close that loved one another so much. He said, I like this religion. Anyway, as he and her were going together at this young age, there was no way I could stop it. I tried. They were writing letters, and the letters were going to the next door neighbor's house. The witnesses really began talking. They would totally ignore the kids, the teenagers would. Again, the crying. Before I know it, they were married by the Justice of the Peace at 17. I was beside myself. Now I was faced with this problem. And now they could say, see, you are worldly. Look at the way your daughter got married. And that's exactly what happened. They had several committee meetings. They asked the kids questions that I could not repeat here. I could never repeat them. Absolutely unbelievable. They decided that they were not satisfied with the answer that my daughter had given. And months later, they called up and wanted another committee meeting. At this point, my wife had had it. She said, I can't stand it anymore. They would come over to my house and talk to the kids. And my wife said, please, don't come here. She said, I'm too upset. And my best friend, who is an elder, said to her, you are not the head of this house, in that tone of voice. This girl belongs to him now. He's her head. You have nothing to say here. I couldn't believe. I was speechless. I would have friends every once in a while. There were a few that would speak to my wife. And because of the business that I'm in with teeth, I don't know how long I'm talking here. This man, this particular family would remain friendly, and I could see today only because I was helping him with his dentures. So anyway, but they would walk in. There were witnesses who walked in, would walk right by my wife in her house and totally ignore her. And I thought this was the cruelest, most abominable thing that I had ever known in my life. And I was beginning to speak, and I said, would be better to whip her than to do what you're doing. There's something wrong with this. They were consistently having committee meetings, questioning me. They told me that I was now not to study with my daughter and her husband, that they should study with someone else. I said, you mean I can't study the Bible with them? Thinking I was studying the Bible into their books. Well, and this brother realized he overstepped himself. And he said, well, you can, but they'll have to study with someone else. I said, I know what you're doing. So anyway, he began to tell me that I was not teaching them the organization's rules and regulations. I was not teaching them the authority of the organization. I recognized immediately that I was into something that was not of God.
getting a little longer than we thought.
Oh,
we'd
I'm
like
sorry.
To dismiss the children so they could go for their program right now. Those from
it's hysterical. I said, I don't know what's happening. I said, all I know is this is a nightmare. I made a decision immediately that I would no longer attend the meetings. I told the elders that this organization could not be from God, that I would never go out and proselytize this and do this to any human being. I told them that whatever they were teaching was of the devil. I was scared of what I was saying. I was really scared. I didn't know what was getting into me. But this is what happened. I immediately started telling my story to everyone. And before I knew it, I listened to Bill Setner. I was invited to a church to hear an ex-Jehovah's Witness. And I said, what is that? And I found out that Bill had been not only a witness, but a Bethel brother. I was shocked. And I was so relieved that somebody could understand what I was going through. I went to a church to hear Bill talk. And we went to the pastor's house, and there I accepted Jesus Christ as my Lord and my Savior. From that time on, my wife lost the taste for alcohol. From that time on, I have never seen a psychiatrist. And I want to give all the glory and thanks to Jesus Christ, our Lord and Savior.